I think you can sort of capture the transformation that we see in all of these texts and in all of the talk today in some interesting ways, maybe. And I guess, what did I want to do initially? I was thinking, you know, it wouldn't be improper to go back as far as Massey maybe again and think about what was going on there, at least very briefly, and that sort of initial set of conditions around production and the question of sort of, you know, making Canadian culture that arose really in a strong way, arguably for the first time in Canada, in the context of, you know, I don't know, what, you know, the economists would call it market failure, right? That we had to kind of intervene in the marketplace to prop up Canadian production in the absence of the willingness of the private sector to take up that task, right, in some way or another. And so that's something that we've come to call subsidy, right? It's one of the words that we use to describe that. The government provides subsidy, reallocates resources toward a good, right? Because the notion of art, for a variety of reasons, right, reflective of national and local experience, so on and so forth. And we'll talk sort of about how that transforms as well over time, briefly. But essentially, a notion of subsidy, let's say. And I want to use that word because really what I wanted to do was then link that to a claim. And if I've got this right, I think it was Franco Bianchini, if it wasn't Landry, although Landry talks more about what kind of a price are you willing to put on this production, which is something else that I think we might have to entertain. But when he's describing a period, and the period that puzzles me the most, and the period that I want to know something about, and I'm not sure I've actually learned that today, but I think I've gotten certainly closer in terms of listening to you guys talk about sort of the exigencies of developing policy. He characterizes the transformation that we see in the 80s, he says, from subsidy to investment. And I think that slogan kind of captures a lot, right? And it's interesting as a condensation to sort of unpack it and think about what that might mean. Now, I'm not sure I'm going to do that, but I'm raising that as a sort of an issue. And, you know, what it means to move from one form to another, you know, from this notion of subsidy to investment. And I think on the other side, we also, there's also another kind of thread there as well. And I'm not exactly sure how I want to formulate that. It might be kind of three terms in some ways. It might be going from art to something called art to something called culture to something called creativity, right? And we can use that maybe as a kind of a set of historical markers as well. And I think maybe those two, to some extent, run parallel to each other perhaps as well. So we have a kind of an interesting discursive shift. And I guess, I mean, you know, obviously my attention to that comes from the fact that I'm not somebody who's creating policy. Right, I'm someone who reads policy. I'm interested in the discourse of policy, so big surprise I'd be sort of interested in these terms. But I'm really sort of interested in what they may be potentially condensed historically, right? and as I said, I mean, I got my opinions about what those might be. I don't really want to kind of elaborate that much about that, perhaps. I think there's some potential upsides, and there's some potential downsides. So, you know, what did Joyce ask me to do? She asked me to look back, and then she asked me to look forward. And so I think back, we see obviously a sort of set of conditions that have, you know, been amply described already by the interlocutors today around sort of the issues of the production of art. I mean, if anything, maybe we can characterize Silcox's report as organized around the stimulation of the production of art, right? And then, of course, as we saw through Hendry, and by the time we get to particularly the Metro report, we see a whole other set of issues, right? The notion of culture, because that's why I raised that question of the definition of culture earlier when Kathleen was talking about it, because I was interested in what appears to be that sort of transformation away from a sort of specific set of concerns around making art to larger sets of concerns about stimulating something called culture. And now, of course, we have creativity, which I don't know what that means. I was kind of hoping you'd figure that out for me. You could rehearse it. You know. Oh, that's how it works. Okay. I didn't realize that. That's my problem. I need a research assistant to delve into the issue.
I think it's a way of keeping artists busy without them actually making art. Well,
you know what? But we can raise that question about whether that's in fact the goal. Right? I'm not talking specifically about, you know, not to make it personal, but about your project. But rather about the sort of larger framework, right? Because this is not specific to Toronto in any sense, right? This is, if at minimum, you know, a larger kind of set of concerns that seem to be circulating in Western societies anyway, and I think in some other parts of the world as well. And indeed, I mean, you know, our other issue is a global one, not just the local one, but the more contemporary situation is also the situatedness of something like a Toronto culture plan in the context of all the other culture plans that every other city is making. And you can raise a set of issues about difference and sameness and so on and so forth. But, you know, you raise an interesting questioning about whether, in fact, yeah, what it is we're making is, or you, in this case, is art anymore, right? Because, of course, now I'm just, you know, going off on what you said. I don't have this as sort of a part of a plan, but clearly, one of the things that comes up already in the Metro Plan, and I think this is consistent with developments elsewhere, internationally, is a transition, and we see this in federal policy too, to a certain extent as well, is the shift from culture to cultural industries, right? We see a language change there on the one hand, right? And I mean, you know, obviously in my own domain at work, I kind of talk about that with respect to things like television and film and so on and so forth. But there is an interesting kind of slippage, right? Can I quote something? Okay, has anyone seen this book? This is a very interesting book. Portrait of the Artist in 2015. It's a very interesting, scary book, right? And it's scary for a lot of reasons. That was part of my rant, so I'm trying not to do the rant and be scary, but I really want to sort of, and I've also seemed to be stuck in the contemporary here, I wanted to sort of raise a bunch of issues about how we maybe got here, or some of the things that we have to contend with. But I think that's, you know, let me just sort of do that, talk about what maybe the more recent and current situation demands that we kind of think about in this context, right? On top of the exigencies, right? I mean, I'll grant you that as policymakers, you have to face, and I thought that term that you guys mobilized today was really interesting, that idea of what you call cultural politics in the sort of narrow sense, right, where you had to do the kind of politics, deal with a set of exigencies to get your program underway, right? And that's kind of interesting. But of course, because I don't have to do that, I have the luxury of kind of looking at this kind of larger framework and thinking about the issues in a broader context, which I think, you know, has its use here in this context. I have a lot of scary quotes I could use. In fact, there's many. The one that I thought maybe was good enough for this context, what does it say? The conclusion that the portrait of an artist is an autonomous creator who should be able to operate and create completely independently is the product of an arts discourse which is out of touch with the reality of today's creative production. It says it's compiled by Ingrid Janssen. This particular article is by this demon called Paul Retton.
I thought you said it was an interesting book.
Oh, it is a very interesting book. It's part. It was a symposium on the issue of sort of, you know, which goes into questions of kind of not only kind of production and position, like what's the relation between autonomy, differentiation, and what appears to be increasing what you might call de-differentiation, right? In other words, this sort of notion that, in a sense, the artist is a migrant worker, right, who simply travels what is, in some minds, in this book anyway, a fairly already well-worn path between the design industries and the fine arts and so on, in an apparently frictionless and unproblematic manner, right? which, I mean, you know, you can raise a set of issues about whether that's true. You know, the model presumably there is like Murakami and Vuitton, you know? That's sort of constitutive, maybe, if we want to kind of capture it in an image, that might be it, right? Okay, that's sort of one set of problems, right? It's like the sense in which when there's the transformation, you know, I'm way ahead of myself in some respects. Let's say if there's a, the one thing we didn't talk about too much today is economic development, the relationship between culture and economic development. And, of course, the fact that, you know, the proximity between those two is such that it's very difficult to tell which is which anymore, arguably. The issue that I want to raise, of course, is, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. As an old sort of Frankfurt School hack that I am, the tendency is for me to immediately become skeptical and suspicious of this, right? But I think it's double-sided, right? I should be better and remain kind of agnostic about it. Because I think there's, you know, how do I put it? There's a set of questions that disturb me about what happens to so-called creative practice when it collapses into economic activity, right? In other words, there was a fantasy, an abiding fantasy of the radical avant-garde, basically to freak people out, right? But the degree to which that freak out was supposed to occur was to place them in a position where they would re-assimilate aesthetic experience into everyday life, right? That was the goal. It was the reconciliation of what appeared to be something missing in the day-to-day, right? That it would bring those two back together. Now, I think we actually see that with respect to the economic integration of creative and cultural practices, potentially. But, you know, I'd raise the issue about, well, is it the same thing? Or is there a different set of goals attached to it, or a different set of meanings? Now, of course, as we know, the Radical Avant-Garde Project failed miserably, right? So, you know, I mean, there was no sense in which we can celebrate that, because it wasn't a success anyway. You know, so that raises, as I said, again, for an old diehard Frankfurter, whether that, you know, demands that I kind of rethink those distinctions between culture and everyday life, between culture and economy. Because on the other side, right, as Rita rightly pointed out, and which was already, I think, building the case in the era that Kathleen was talking about, what's kind of cool and interesting is the centrality that culture has. Because obviously, you could get the sense in the era that Silcox is talking about, there's a struggle, right? There's a major struggle to get people to care about culture. Now, I sort of, you could place that against a situation where I can't get into a freaking event at Nuit Blanche. I mean, what are people doing up at that time of day? It's crazy, right?
So then why is the avant-garde project a failure?
Right, in other words, whether the success of Damien Hirst in the marketplace constitutes the victory of the avant-garde may or may not be the case. But the flip side of that is, as I said, everyone's paying attention, right? How many decades did we all moan, and I'm older than I look, about, you know, the absence of interest in art, right, or in cultural practice and so on and so forth. So, okay, that's sort of one thing. Now, that's just art, right? If I can bracket that kind of off as a set of practices from culture, which is in some ways a whole other set of problems, and creativity, which, as I said, I haven't figured out. Maybe if I keep talking, it'll come to me. But of course, the big difference is that there's a difference. Let's put it that way. Because the discourse on creativity is about inclusion. The discourse on artistic activity is about distinction. Right? And I think those are key differences that we have to think about as well, right? In other words, let's say what I was calling the subsidy model is about enabling a specific sector of the society to pursue practices in an unfettered manner, basically, without being beholden to the market, because those things were good. But it was aimed, right? And that was, of course, the struggle and the friction and the tension had to do with the special case, right? The idea that there was a special case to be made for art and that you and I and everybody else would pay a portion of our income taxes to enable that, particularly in the case of Canada, which apparently suffered a set of constraints that didn't enable it in the usual manner, that is, through the market. Creativity is a different story. It's not about distinction. It's about sameness. And that, you know, I would be interested in raising some, that is an issue as well, right? In other words, on the one hand, morally, it's kind of tough to be against creativity. You know, who wants to take a stand against creativity, right? That look, that just doesn't have good optics, clearly, right? But, you know, if I was going to be really grumpy, I could make some sort of complaints about it as a kind of a resource. You know, the question about whether creativity, you know, because obviously you get both, and you mentioned this, Charles Landry, of course, one of the key actors here, and then also our pal Richard Florida, right? And, you know, one of the problems with it, to be frank, is that as what you call the paradigm, it is a little vague. Now, that may be good for you, right? That may give you the flexibility that you need to, you know, drive the truck through the gap. Okay, that's fine. But as I said, that's not my job. That's not what I do. The problem is, potentially, okay, I'm trying to be as agnostic as possible and yet raise sort of both sides of the issue here. Like, it seems like a good thing. We're all creative. Excellent, right? We're all scrapbooking. Things are, you know, everybody's making an impact, et cetera. We're all being encouraged. And, you know, right, it's like I said, how can you be against creativity? It's crazy. But, you know, you could also raise that as a problem, right? Because it does seem sort of reductive. It, like, flattens everything out, right? So there might be a downside to creativity, too, potentially, if it's, you know, whether it just becomes another kind of, well, okay, let's be Marxist for a sec, you know, a sort of resource for capital, right? Another resource to exploit in this new model, right, that sort of doesn't distinguish between design work, on the one hand, making paintings and making purses, you know, that those two are ultimately kind of equivalent and one just slides around in between those, or as Adorno says, rattle around in a big hall on a covered wagon. That's how he describes culture. What else do I want to talk about? So, as I said, I'm not going to make a set of claims. I'm just going to raise a sort of set of, you know, these as kind of issues. What did I want to say? Something about globalization, maybe. Something about lifestyles and transformations, because I think the centrality of culture, obviously, is really in part, like I said, I think it's a good thing. Like, I'm all for the fact that people care about culture. I think that's brilliant, right? That makes for a refreshing change. And that people recognize the importance, as you rightly pointed out, you know, the centrality of kind of culture to all the other practices and your attempt to kind of integrate that. And I think we see that reasonably successfully, at least rhetorically, in the master plan, you know, how it will unfold. We'll see, right? But nevertheless, I mean, I think that's an accomplishment. And it also reflects an interest, right? I mean, it's not as if, like, it's a two-way thing here. You know, it's not as if you just force this on them. Obviously, they were receptive to that notion, right? And I think there's a larger kind of receptivity to that kind of question of culture. People are more interested in it, you know, where it gains a kind of centrality that we haven't seen before. The question, of course, and this is the one that we could raise again vis-a-vis an analysis of Florida in particular, is the degree to which, I mean, somebody mentioned he doesn't talk about anywhere about artists. Now, I don't know if that's completely true. That might be a little hyperbolic, but, you know, it still sort of makes the point, which is the degree to which sort of creativity, creatives, is reduced to a kind of stimulation based on an eclecticism of experiences that one has in a, you know, a supposedly kind of vibrant city, right? I was thinking, the only other thing I wanted to add to this was the question of culture itself, because what's interesting is how in culture increasingly, as we see in the talk today, and I mean, you know, this is your burden too, I think, in extent, you know, cultural affairs at this point has to kind of negotiate this problem, is the increasing demand that culture bear the weight of a whole bunch of different burdens, right? You're right? I mean, you're saying yes, yeah, because you understand exactly what I said, right? In other words, at one point it was this kind of shiny little thing, like on the, you know, pinned on the Christmas tree of the economy. I guess, if you wanted to put it that way. And now, part of its centrality is that it has to bear a lot, right? Because it has to do kind of two things, and we can ask whether those two things are potentially contradictory as well. On the one hand, it has to bear the burden of economic regeneration and development, right? It becomes the kind of key locus in the absence. I mean, North America is maybe a little more complicated in some respects, but or maybe not, I don't know. But, you know, there's particularly the way in which we can see through the transformations, particularly the, evacuation, let's put it that way, of an industrial and manufacturing economy to other parts of the globe has left a vacuum in terms of especially, excuse me, at the city level, right? And this was experienced, it seems at least, in a deeper way in Europe initially than it has been here. I'm not sure, but I mean, that's another story. but of course, culture then, for reasons which I still don't quite understand, but may be linked to social issues, perhaps, becomes the panacea. Culture, seemingly, in a lot of the discourse, right, when you read the Landry discourse, you read the Bianchini, you read the Derek Wynne, especially the British discourse, right, they're all about this stuff. And of course, Florida is a version of that in the North American context as well. Okay, so though on the one hand, culture is supposed to bear this burden, right? All of a sudden, it's got a new task. It's not only supposed to make you a better person, right? It's also supposed to give you an income, right? It's when you translate, and of course, in the cultural industries context, it's where you translate your consumption into modes of production, right? Where you learn, as you've learned for years of watching commercials on television, what taste is, and so on, and you redeploy that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. but as I said, I'm trying to remain agnostic. But the other thing that it has to bear is something that I sort of understand, social cohesion. You know more about that than I do. Which I think is interesting and potentially a contradiction, right? In other words, it's supposed to make us all come together as one happy family, right? In other words, culture, you know, produces identity, collective identity, et cetera, right? It's no longer kind of Bildung in a traditional sense of self-development in a kind of romantic version. It's now a kind of collective enterprise, right? The production of kind of self through a relation to others, right? And the building of that cohesiveness through cultural practice. My final point is simply the degree to which economic competition and social cohesion work against each other. Even though it seems, at least from what I read in the larger policy sphere, that that's what culture is supposed to accomplish. Okay, so let me leave it at that.